Thank you for tuning into the VF1 show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the show. We're not down under, and I'm not going to make any down under jokes like upside down stuff and all that, because I've seen way too many upside down memes and upside down tweets this week. But we're just coming to you live, kind of, from our studios in the United States. So let's just leave it at that. I'm Vincenzo. You know me, and you know on the other side of the line, Vanessa VF Castro. She's there, I promise you. Say hi, Vanessa.
Hello. Hello, Vincenzo. How are you today?
She always jumps in. She's like, puts the voice on. She like puts the voice on. She's like, hello. And it's always so like
delightful.
Soothing and delightful to
you know
to
what's
hear.
Funny you know what's funny a little colorful, cheeky, but when I first started in sports radio, I'm dating myself, 15 maybe years ago, one of my old coworkers didn't realize it was me, and he came into work one morning and he said, hey, I just heard there's this new sports radio and the girl kind of sounds like a porn star. And he didn't know that that was me, because obviously, like, I went by VF. And our manager told him, oh, yeah, that's Vanessa. You know that, right? And he's like, what the?
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
So, yeah. Anyway, I've been told quite a few colorful things. But anyway, yes, I do sound soothing. So it was just probably a good thing, because Formula One is a very hypercharged sport.
It is. And you just bring that voice. I like it.
Thank you.
There's some good stuff to talk about. We're coming to you about an hour before FP3 and 4 hours before qualifying. This episode will be out probably after you watch qualifying. Some people may watch qualifying, others may not. So anything we talk about, maybe if we make a prediction, we're recording this before, just heads up and for the record. But a couple things that found interesting this week and I thought were newsworthy, noteworthy. This one you'll like. The Angela Cullen is back in the paddock. She's in the IndyCar paddock as Marcus Armstrong's physio. Did you hear that and see that?
I did not hear that, but the yeah. F1 and Armstrong crossover game is strong.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yep. He's got Lizzie. Now he's got Angela.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty soon. I mean, I don't know. He'd be coming for an F1 seat.
Yeah, probably
That's
not.
That's cool.
probably not. I just think it's cool. I just think it's cool to see Angela back in the spotlight and in IndyCar.
Yeah. You know, that seems like her speed. If I'm being honest, I think F1 is one of those sports that it's addicting when you're in it. When you're actually traveling and you're part of that paddock, it is addicting. And everyone I know who's worked for F1 has said that when you're there, it's the coolest, it's the biggest rush ever. But when you step away from it and you see the world differently, because you have seen the world differently traveling all over the place. So
yeah,
I think this is a really good change of pace for her. I'm excited for her. That's cool.
Yeah, it's good. I saw that and I was like, oh, that's fun. I was like, that's a good spot for her to be. Very likely, you know, lower pressure, like you said.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that's what it is. It's the pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. So. I mean, there's pressure. And, you know, the thing is too, like with Formula One is that, you know, you're working with Lewis Hamilton. And so as he gets older and as he ages, you know, I'm not saying Lewis is limited by his physical. We all are, right? We, at some point, our bodies are no longer can perform the way they do. And I think that manifests itself. And she is the physio for, you know, Lewis Hamilton. And the minute a little bit of a lull comes, it's like, okay, what issues are there? And I don't know if there was any challenges between Lewis and Angela, but, you know, you can just imagine that how stressful that is for you. It's like, how do I help this person perform even more? and you know, they're getting older. There's only so much that they can do, and maybe they want to do, right? Let's face it, Lewis has achieved all there is to achieve in Formula One. Did he care as much anymore about certain things? I'm not suggesting Lewis doesn't care about winning or anything, but that's definitely a spot to be in for her.
Yeah, Lewis used to stress his physio a lot. He used to talk about Angela a lot, and ever since they separated, you don't hear him talk about that. There's a lot of ambiguity as to who his actual team is now. And then we've got this move coming to Ferrari, and it just seems like Lewis is just looking for a different direction. I think he knows he's only got a couple good years left. I think that when you get to a point and it's like, do I want to continue doing this? And so sometimes, yeah, you do have to clean house. You do have to re-strategize. And I don't know that we're going to hear much about Lewis's team until he gets to Ferrari, if I'm being honest, because it kind of seems like Mercedes is already in regressing mode. And I don't know.
Yeah, no, and it's also tough. I mean, you're in this transition year. There's not much you can actually do right now. It's probably pretty weird in the Mercedes paddock with we're not going to show Lewis the 2026 car at this point, or we're not going to, you know, so it's just a weird year for that whole team anyway. But I mean, Angela's was gone midway through last year. Mm-hmm. And listen, let's put it this way. If she just wanted a break, that would be enough of a reason. If she was just like, yo, I don't want to deal with this anymore, or I'm not interested, or I'm just stressed. It's not lost on me that she would go to a series like IndyCar, which doesn't require the international travel. I'm not saying you have necessarily a life where you're not traveling, but at least in IndyCar, the calendar or any, that's a series that's based just in the US. Yeah. So you have all travel within the US. You can have somewhat of a home base if you want, and that's really tough in Formula One. You know, you and I have talked about this kind of offline a little bit, like that lifestyle is very much the Formula One lifestyle caters very much to folks that are either single or they've been in it forever, to where like your significant other already knows you in that space. It's not something where you're like suddenly, oh yeah, but like if I told my wife right now, like, hey, I'm gonna go join the F1, I'm gonna go join an F1 team and follow whatever Ferrari around as a marketing person, it would be like, yeah, probably not, right? Like that's not really feasible at this point. But also after you've done it for a long time, again, like Angela, I mean, you still want to be in racing, or you still want to be around high performers like that. And IndyCar is a great series, and it just doesn't, I mean, let's face it, it just doesn't require the level of travel. And I would say, I'm not going to say it doesn't require stress. I just don't think it requires the level of like physical for someone, a support person. I'm not talking about drivers here. It just doesn't require you to like, again, the travel. Traveling all over the world is that kills you
logistically. It's just not as demanding.
So
your job is still demanding. You still have to perform at a very high level, but it's also 100%. A lot easier to perform at that level when you aren't having to battle things like jet lag, when you aren't having to think about major social or government issues going on in these different countries that you're traveling into, where you have to be briefed on an inbound flight what to expect when you land. Like there's just a different level especially when you're a woman working in the sport.
I did incorrectly say, like, I think they do race in Toronto, which is Canada. Yeah, so it's technically an international series.
North American.
But you're racing in, St. Petersburg, Florida. You're racing in Long Beach, California. Then you're going to Alabama. You're in Indianapolis, Detroit. You're at Road America. You're at Mid-Ohio. Those are all, like, anyone that knows the Midwest, it's all within a few hours of each other, those three races I just mentioned.
It's the same continent. So
So anyway, anyway, good for her. I'm happy for her. The Australian GP, like I said, is happening right this weekend. Interesting stat I found from Friday's practice session was that There were 124,113 people at Albert Park for Friday practice, according to Sean Kelly, virtual stat man on the tweets, on the Twitter. And that is the largest crowd in Australian GP history.
Nice.
So the crowds are showing up, which is awesome. The in-person attendance last year increased. So this is good. That's trending upwards. It'll be, I'm curious to see if the TV audience follows that, which we know it probably won't, especially with the timing of this. It's really early in the morning for the European audience, and it's really late at night for most of the US audience. And again, most people assume that Max Verstappen is going to take it home. So we'll see. But I think it's promising to see, you know, an increase in in-person attendance. And listen, I think it's great that people go to races. I think people should go to races. That's where the magic happens. The magic doesn't happen on TV. I promise you that. Like, if you're not going to races, and I'm not saying go to Formula One races, go to an IMSA race, go to an IndyCar race, a NASCAR race, MotoGP, whatever race you can get yourself to, go see cars on track, because it's so much better than just watching it on TV. And there's so many other series outside of Formula One that I think a lot of newer motorsport fans or a lot of newer fans to Formula One probably don't even realize exist, right? Yeah. But with all that said, I think it's really cool that people are showing up and they are showing out in numbers there in Australia. I have a couple friends on the ground and they're having an absolute blast, and they think it's a great event, which it's always. I think Australia is fantastic. I think Australia should be the first race of the season. It's a lovely, it is absolutely lovely. It's good to see.
Well said.
Into some of the other, the bigger stuff that I want to talk about. I want to hear your thoughts on Susie Wolf's statement that dropped this week. I'm going to read the statement in full and then I get your comment on it. But Susie put out on Wednesday. It was like Wednesday after. It was actually, I think it was pretty late in the day too, because it was around 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it was Wednesday.
Eastern.
Yeah,
it was 5 o'clock Eastern. So, unless she's with Toto, I don't know if she's in Australia. I'm guessing. Let's say she's in Australia. I guess that timing works for her. But if she was in the UK, I mean, it's like 10 o'clock at night. Anyway, it was just an interesting timing, right? Like last thing in the day, 5 o'clock. She said, "I can confirm that I personally filed a criminal complaint in the French courts on the 4th of March in relation to the statements made about me by the FIA last December. There still has not been any transparency or accountability in relation to the conduct of the FIA and its personnel in this matter. I feel more than ever it is important to stand up, call out improper behavior, and make sure people are held to account. While some may think silence absolves them from responsibility, it does not."
Yeah.
Thoughts? What do you like? That was a bomb that she threw out there on Wednesday.
Yeah,
and I feel like it's kind of gone under the radar, which is weird because I really thought
it has.
It's gone very much under the radar. Like most of the F1 personalities and commentators and all, like, have not said anything about it.
Well. I think this all kind of goes into, I mean, several other things happened after that. Shortly after that, I believe it was the FIA cleared FIA president Mohammed Bin Sulayem of
it was actually shortly before that.
Oh,
it was actually
before.
Right, I think, well, at least on my timeline of things.
It was around that time frame.
It was like pretty bang bang in terms of which happened. It was like the news of FIA president, and then all of a sudden Susie Wolf drops this. So.
So it just all happened in very close proximity. And so I think in light of the ongoing situation with Christian Horner, it's just everybody keeps talking about accountability and transparency. Those two words kind of seem to be the driver of a lot of, I think, conversation this year that needs to happen and just isn't happening anywhere. And again, why did that accusation come out against the Wolves, right? That just seemed a little like And all of us were taken aback by it. All of us were like, wait, what? And then suddenly everybody was doing an audit of all 10 teams. And well, who's denying this and who's that? And suddenly all of the teams came out with unanimous statements. And so you kind of got an idea that, no, this wasn't something that was told to the FIA by a Formula One team principal, because they're all denying it. And so again, what was the whistleblower complaint? Who was the whistleblower? Or were they just grasping at straws and hoping that one of the teams said, it's kind of like an investigation, you know, where you've got investigators and they're telling one guy, well, we know that you've got something, or so-and-so told us something about you. And, you know, we just need you to confirm it. Did you do it or did you not do it? Even though the other party never said anything, right? I think that was maybe the FIA's way of baiting one of the teams to actually say something. Who knows? But the timing of it was all so just off. And then shortly after, we start hearing whispers of Christian Horner and all that stuff. And then it's just been ongoing. And then suddenly Mohammed Ben Sulayem is being accused of fixing races, or, you know, just whatever that was. And suddenly, oh, nope, he's cleared of wrongdoing. So there's zero transparency in the sport. And we've now had three incidents where there's three very serious accusations happening, and there's zero accountability and there's zero transparency of facts. Even just a couple weeks ago, all those journalists and F1 personnel allegedly received a file that had all of this incriminating evidence on it against Christian Horner. Where is that? Or did we all just waste our time sending a news blast that day, or reading news that day, and you know, coming to our own conclusions that day when there was nothing verifiable behind it? Because nobody has seemed to verify any of that, right? So, and if this massive docu-dump came out, where is it? What was on it? If these allegations against Susie Wolf, they're very serious allegations too. Where's the proof? It just seems like a lot of shit, a lot of drama happening in one short period of time. And it's getting us talking about the sport for sure. It's not in a good way though. So, and then, you know, there's always the moniker of, well, any PR is good PR. Well, it's not good PR when you're starting to risk losing trust of your fan base. And it's not to say that they won't actually go to races or watch the races, but they don't trust you. And you need to be able to have your fans know that they can trust the actual integrity of the race. Otherwise, I do think somewhere down the line, you do risk losing fans, because then they wonder, is there an actual fix going on in the sport? And who does the fix benefit? Does the fix benefit the sponsors? What's going on? And then you start to have the conspiracy theories run rampant. And I just think that right now is a good opportunity for Formula One and the FIA to just quorum and say, you know, this cannot happen anymore. We look like a bunch of amateurs. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
No, I just think, you know, I do think it's interesting. And, you know, when it came out, when the FIA had announced that there was a subject of, they were, that the Wolves were a subject of an investigation, this alleged conflict of interest. That statement feels weird, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's an alleged conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And there was a magazine report that claimed that other team principals were concerned that Toto Wolff was benefiting from information shared by his wife. Mm-hmm. Listen to me. Let's get this straight. First of all, the entire series since its inception is one big conflict of interest.
Yeah.
You know, you've got oil companies sponsoring these cars. You've got team principals and people that own, you know, own these teams that switch, you know, that move back and forth between teams. You have Red Bull's got two teams.
That's the biggest one
Red
of
Bull,
them all.
Red Bull. Well, they've got, you know, they've openly got two teams, which they see as no conflict of interest, though, the FIA.
Yeah, of course.
And then you've got, but there's also other relationships. I'm not going to go easy on like a Ferrari and a Haas. They work out of the same damn building.
Yep.
And Maranello. You know, the relationship between Williams and Mercedes, while it is not, it is not at all what the Red Bull relationship is. And Toto Wolff still has a strong say in, hey, I want a driver here. But let's look at like all the Red Bull situation, like the Red Bull drivers in general. You know, Red Bull, oh, well, we kind of own Alex Albon, but not really. But he's a Red Bull driver because he went through the, you know, Red Bull Academy. But so it's like there's conflicts of interest everywhere. Yeah. You know, let's just say that first and foremost. The other interesting aspect of that story was the fact that the FIA ended up ending its investigation like 2 days after announcing this, which was weird because it's like you make this statement and who does that benefit, only to be like, oh no, it's all done. Like there's no issue. That's okay. Great. There's no issue. But now you've already ruined that person's reputation or potentially ruined that person's reputation. Right. That sometimes that can be worse than like just, you know, going through a discovery process. Like it's bad enough. You know, Donald Trump made an entire presidency of that, where he just saying something and throwing it out there causes you to question it, that no one's even going to pay attention to the follow up when it's like, well, wait a minute, that's false.
Yeah, exactly.
So, the whole situation is weird. Also, I mean, really rich coming from the FIA to be the ones, you know, calling the shots here. Mm-hmm. Former FIA president was also a team principal of Ferrari. You know, like, it's just, it's all one big conflict of interest. So let's like get that off the fact. But also, what are they benefiting? What is Toto Wolff really benefiting? I mean, look, let's be real here. Mercedes looks like dog shit right now. What on earth? Like, where? What benefit did he get from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, some people are going to say they benefited back in what, 2014? They got to work on the car. What? Okay, you know, whatever you want to say with all that kind of stuff. But like right now, what benefit are they getting? And I think that for the FIA even to announce, like, okay, fine, you receive a complaint, fine. But to then go out and put that out there against the team principal to one of your most successful teams and the freaking director of your series, your women's series. She's not just the wife of Toto Wolff, which apparently Sky and a lot of these other news outlets want to report her as. Oh, she's just the team principal's
wife.
Yeah,
she's just Toto's wife.
No, she literally runs F1's Academy. She is the managing director of F1 Academy, which is a Formula One. It, like, that's Formula One's actual initiative.
Project.
Now, I guess we can go down that path too and say, all right, well, the FIA clearly has beef with F1. We know there's issues there. There's a lot of power struggle between the two parties, but it's just getting to be really like a bunch of shit slinging back and forth. And who wants to claim this and who wants to claim that? And
I keep thinking
it's a banana republic.
Yeah, exactly. They're just, it's like they're throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what's going to stick. And you can't do that. You just can't do that. You have to be careful about the things that you say. You have to be careful about what you put out there. And why would you put, again, like I said, with an investigator with witnesses, why would you put something out there when you don't have the proof? This is just a whisk. This is just an allegation. Well, if it's just an allegation, but there's absolutely zero merit to the allegation, there's absolutely nothing to fuel it, then why would you put that out there in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know exactly what you're doing. Is this war against Susie Wolf? Do you not like Susie? Do you not like having like, and I think what that does more than anything is it brings up this idea that, I wouldn't say idea, narrative in the last couple of weeks, that a lot of people have said, this is the FIA just not liking women. This is Formula One just not liking women. And you've seen, again, in light of the Christian Horner issue, you've seen so much of that. I don't think I've seen so much of this like sexist narrative in Formula One ever. And that speaks volumes because, I mean, this was never a super, super friendly sport to women anyway. But it just, the fact that you have so many women now coming out and saying that this sport has an issue with women, I think, let's look at the FIA. Let's look at this collective of everything that's been happening in the last couple of months and say, we have to ask a serious question. Does the FIA have a serious women issue right now? And I think the answer to that is yes, because it just seems like so much of this has to do with women and how they're treated. And these, again, in the case of Susie Wolf, she's a leader in the sport. And this blind accusation with nothing to it. And suddenly people have their people already don't like Susie Wolf because they don't like Toto Wolf. They don't like Lewis Hamilton. And then suddenly you're just giving them fuel. So I think that's the bigger conversation that needs to be had among the F1 and FIA circles, and that they're not doing anything to make themselves look favorably to this growing narrative of women who are just calling F1 and the FIA for what they're seeing. So if this isn't actually like we race for all or whatever the slogan was, mm-hmm. Then be about it. You know, don't just be some slogan on a race car or a helmet. Be about it. If not, then shut your mouths and stop spreading gossip and rumor and these false narratives, because you're just going to start to piss people off, because that's exactly what's happening right now. So I don't know. I just think that, and also in that same vein, you have so many content creators who are coming out and saying, oh, I hate F1. I hate the FIA. I hate what they're doing right now. They're anti-women. They're this, they're that. And yet they're still participating in the things that are promoting them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's like to even them be about it. If you don't like this, then you know, what are you doing? You're basically just playing into, you're playing the part. So there's just a lot of, this sport is having a weird, I think, era right now. I don't know.
I mean, I'm with you 100%. I mean,
yeah.
Speaking of weird eras, Alex Albon destroyed his car in practice, practice one in Australia. Was not on the track for practice two. And later on, he was essentially just given Logan Sargeant's car for the weekend, as Logan Sargeant has been withdrawn from competing for the remainder of the Australian Grand Prix weekend. But the best part of this, is that Williams just didn't have another chassis.
Exactly.
It's not like Logan got sick or had his appendix removed, a la Carlos Sainz. They just didn't have another chassis. James Vowles decided that Alex Albon was their best shot at, get this, points, and decided to pull Logan Sargeant out of the car. Now, we're both laughing at this, and I think anybody that's listening to this is probably like, what?
I'm so mad.
And of course, so I posted, I kind of made a joke about Williams using Excel as their, rather than an actual enterprise report, enterprise resource planning tool. That was a story that also kind of came out earlier this week. I wrote about it in the newsletter. You can check it out at readqualifier.com. But it was one of the more interesting things I actually read this week, that Williams was navigating the complexities of their factory, their parts, their budgeting with Excel. And listen, Excel is very powerful. Don't get me wrong. But we're talking about this was a 20,000 column column sheet. Like there was like 20,000 parts of the car that were being tracked in Excel. And Vowles actually said the spreadsheet was impossible to navigate and impossible to update. Now there was, I actually did a little bit of research on this, and it was interesting. There was, in 2017, there was a reporter who was on assignment with Renault, for Ars Technica. He found that Renault was using a spreadsheet for their design and build process, and it was 77,000 lines long, almost triple over triple what the one Vowles found at Williams. And I'm thinking to myself, like, Okay, that's a funny story. So when I wrote it and I put the story out, I actually put it out yesterday, Thursday, and then we see that they didn't have a chassis for this week, and an extra chassis. I was like, oh my God, either they're using Excel or the budget cap, or they just don't have the money, right? Yeah. Like there's something. And a lot of folks were like, well, you know, typically teams don't have a spare chassis in Australia. And I was like, yeah, maybe when Australia was the first race of the season. This is the fourth race of the season. There's teams bringing upgrades shortly. Like, can't tell me that.
Teams are bringing upgrades to the first race. It's just after testing.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like,
that's not an excuse.
So I thought all of that was kind of fascinating that all of that happened. And my initial response online when they made the comment of I actually put this tweet out. So Williams put a tweet out with a statement. It was like a statement from Alex, a statement from Logan, and a statement from James. And I'm not going to read them. Basically, it just says that due to the fact that they don't have another chassis available, they're giving the car to Alex. I mean, straight up.
Blah, blah.
My tweet was, in quotes, on the basis of the application as it stands, we do not believe that the applicant has shown that it would be that it would add value to the championship. And of course, a lot of people did not understand what I was saying. A lot of people did and were like, Andretti has nothing to do with this. You made a comment while we were talking in the pre-show. What did you say about Andretti?
I forgot.
Do you remember what you said? You basically said, I bet Andretti would have had another chassis.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't bet. Like, I would bet my house that Andretti would have brought another chassis because Andretti has her shit together.
I want to know how many teams and I'm not sitting here. I have not had the time to dive in but I want to know what other teams do any other teams not have a chassis available this weekend?
Could you imagine? Okay. Hypothetically, we're Las Vegas 2023. Okay. Carlos Sainz gets his car blown up on a manhole. No fault of his. Could you imagine the hits Ferrari would have taken if they went to that race unprepared for everything that could have happened? Imagine if Carlos had to sit that race out because they didn't have the parts. Or imagine if they said to Charles, hey, we're going to need to give your car to, say he was doing better that weekend. We're going to need to give your car to
Charles.
No, not to Charles. If they took Charles' car and gave it to Carlos that weekend.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Could you imagine the drama that would have ensued?
No, I couldn't.
My God, you can't because they're a pretty well-oiled machine.
But the other thing that this proves, and I think this is what bothers me the most about the situation, is that why would you keep Logan on? Why would you resign him him on for the year if you don't have the confidence in that driver to get you position or point? Now, granted, I'm not saying Logan's setting the world on fire, right? He's not. I don't think he was ever ready, right, to really be in the F1 seat.
Yeah.
But why would you just straight up? I mean, so now you're straight up saying we don't have confidence in this kid. Very likely not going to be, you know, I would say he's probably not driving for them next year, right? Like, there's probably no way. We're likely going to see Kimi Antonelli, and that's in that seat. What benefit is that to do that to him four races into the season? Like, how do you now get him to be motivated to do anything for you? Like,
here's the thing. Everybody is saying right now that, oh, well, this is a team sport and you have to give the team the best opportunity to win. I'm like, oh, really?
It's a very different. This is not football.
Right.
And I'm talking about the European one. This is not basketball. This is not NFL. Like, it's a very different type of team sport. Yes, you're on a team, but you are very much trying to beat the other guy on your team.
We are on our third race. Okay.
Fourth
race. Okay. We're on our fourth race.
No, third race. Wait a minute. Which race is it? Oh my God. We had Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. That's
third.
It.
We're on the third race.
This is the third race.
I was
Oh my
right.
goodness.
Ha ha.
You were right. Oh my goodness.
I'm better at F1 than you. Joking.
That's totally fine.
Anyway. Okay.
So, to read the replies to some of my tweets, you would think I've never watched the sport a day in my life.
Same. Oh my gosh, I'm a DTS fan, y'all. Oh my gosh. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So let's just talk about this. 2022. You know how many points Albon scored the entire season? Four.
But he might score a point this weekend in Australia. So give him Logan's car.
Okay. He scored 27 points last year. He's averaging, 1.17 some odd points per race. Okay. But sure, we're three races into the season and Alex Albon has a better chance of scoring points, even though he only scored 3 points more in his first season at Williams than Logan Sargeant did. What the actual F are these quote unquote fans referring to? Okay, maybe they're the DTS fans who just like pick up the sport over the summer and don't know what they're talking about, because that is the logic that they're trying to justify here.
Listen, I like Alex. Same. Right? Like, I actually really like Same. Alex Albon. I kind of wanted Ferrari to grab Alex Albon when Carlos was going to be gone. Yeah. I was totally all about it. But this is totally not like,
but to take a race away from a driver, okay, who was only 3 points down from their preferred driver in their debut season, to take a race away from him, to take those points opportunities mm-hmm. away from him is absurd. That is absurd. Well,
and for zero reason.
For zero reason. Albon.
He did nothing.
Shunted the car. He messed up
destroyed
his car.
It.
He destroyed it. Exactly.
Engine, gearbox. Yeah. I mean, everything. The whole car everything. Is absolutely useless.
Destroy his car. And so what are they doing to figure? They're giving him another driver's car who did absolutely nothing wrong. And there isn't a single thing this guy can do about it because he scored 26 points more. Well, I would hope that he would score more points than Logan Sargeant, because he's in his second year. So
listen, look,
it the
Logan
logic,
scored 1 point last year, right? He scored a point.
Yeah. But I'm saying that Albon only scored 4 points in 2022. That's basically what people are saying. Like that's the justification for people are saying, well, because he scored 27 points and Logan only scored a point, that's why he's the better driver and deserves.
And that was his rookie. And that was,
right.
That was Albon. I mean, that was Sargeant's rookie season. Right.
So the comparison the maths are not mathing to justify what people are trying to justify. And that's what's really irritating me, because it's like, mm-hmm. again, did you guys just pick the sport up? Like,
I understand. I listen here.
It's annoying. I'm annoying.
I get it. Albon is far more like, there's a lot more promise. When anyone that watched Formula One,
right? But in that
anyone
car.
That watched, well, anyone that watched, I was just thinking like about Logan, right?
Yeah.
A lot of us did not think that he was necessarily the right fit for, you know, driving in that car. If you look at his, you know, F2 in 22, he finished fourth. Before that, I don't think he won any Formula 4, British. I don't think he won anything. And I don't think he finished better than third. He might have finished second in an Formula 4 season or something, but like, whatever. He hasn't, like, there was no pedigree there, right?
Yeah.
Other than his uncle is a billionaire. So,
other than the push for America and Formula 1.
Well, and okay. Yeah. So I'm really glad you said that, because not only did Formula One reject Andretti, and not just Formula One. I'm not going to say Formula One like this abstract thing. Formula One, like the teams.
Yeah.
There was 10 teams. They rejected, you know, Andretti, an American team. But now you're also kind of rejecting this American driver. And it's like, well, you want the dollars from the Americas. You want to have all these races here. You want to have your big Vegas headquarters here. Obviously it's in Vegas, but like your big headquarters in Vegas. But this is how you're kind of treating the, like, and again, I'm not suggesting that Williams is at the core of this problem. I'm saying that it's just another piece to the puzzle. And it's like, well, don't you like, why, why do you not want this kid to drive? He did nothing. You had enough confidence to re-sign him and say, like, all right, come back for a second year, even though you showed us absolutely no, you know, there was no promise there. Like, and again, no offense to Logan. Seems like a great kid. I don't know him personally. I would love to see him be successful. But you chose to bring him on. That was your decision. You said to yourself, yes, we are going to support this kid. And then you don't have the balls is really what I want to use to just be like, yeah, go for it. Like, you screwed up. The other guy screwed up. You don't deserve to just take a car. And so, you know, a lot of people said the opposite. Oh, wow. James Vohl's got balls for making that hard decision. And I'm like, I guess, but.
I think it was, I just think it was a mean, unnecessary thing to do. Again, it's not like we're halfway through the season. It's not like we're somewhere down the home stretch and everybody's trying to, you know, score points in the midfield, whatever it is. Like, we're so early in the season where that is just such an unnecessary thing that basically says to Alex Albon, look, you can cause $10 million in damage to the car this year. And guess what? We're going to take Logan's car and we're going to give it to you because you deserve it.
Yeah.
That's basically what that says, is that you have two cars in the garage. Have fun. Like, how is that okay? How is that teaching accountability when everybody always wants to sit there at the end of every season and talk about, rank all the drivers by how much damage they cause their teams as a justification for why they should or should not have a seat the following contract year? So if that's what we're doing, then Alex Albon has already, I think when you actually look at it, potentially could have already achieved the damage report of several drivers on the grid last year in the entire season. So in one race, in one car. So I think that's just rewarding mediocrity. And if Alex Albon is, we know what he's capable of doing. My God, the guy was with Red Bull. We know what he's capable of doing. He's been in the sport long enough where he should be held accountable. Again, we talk about that word, accountable. He should be held accountable. Mm-hmm. Listen, you messed your car up. You're not racing this weekend. Use this as a learning moment. And then done. And then the next time he goes to make a mistake, maybe he's gonna think twice about doing the thing that he wants to do that could potentially cause the accident or cause a mistake. So this doesn't teach him anything. This just says you don't have to be held accountable for what you've done. Because now we're going to take somebody else's drive from you. And that's not okay. So, and I think a lot of us can sit there and say, well, we can have our opinion about that. But imagine if something similar to that happened to you in your personal work environment, you'd be livid. Anytime somebody takes that credit for anything that you do at work, you get livid. Mm-hmm. This is very similar. Yeah. So, you know, put yourself in the driver's shoes and remember that they are people too. Logan Sargeant is a person and he did not deserve this.
No. And, you know, I think to myself, all right, well, if the goal here is to get points.
Yeah.
Number one, the odds of Alex driving that car on the limit, you know, at the limit. Listen, maybe I'll be wrong, right? Maybe I'll be wrong, but to think that he's going to go out there and just drive like a madman, you know, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, which would mean he's going to get points, right? To get points, he's going to have to drive really fast.
Yeah.
He's going to have to really be aggressive out there. That's kind of wild because I highly doubt he's going to go out there knowing that it's the only car they have left. Mm-hmm. And he's really going to put that car to the test. Like, I'm going to beat the living daylights out of this car. Like, I doubt it, right? But also, like, and again, I would never wish, I don't wish this on anyone, but like, what if he ruins the car? What if he crashes the car again? Now what? Like, how dumb do you look if, and maybe that's why I'm not a team principal, but you know.
Well, the Australian.
You kind of looks foolish.
The Australian Grand Prix is not a kind race to restarts. We know that. So there is potential that could happen. And I hate to say that, but that's just the truth here. But when it actually comes down to driving to the limits, we've talked about this quite a bit on the show. Does the cap hinder drivers' ability to actually do that, knowing that they don't have the budget? And in the case of Williams not having a spare chassis, well, okay. Does this, again, make the same argument for for the cap or against the cap. Where, but I think more granular is that they should have to spend at least $145 million. There should maybe be a spending floor rather than a cap, because if you're not spending the money to be in the sport, yeah, then you have no business being in the sport. I don't care how you know much of a pedigree your name brings to the grid.
Yeah,
that's just
fact. I'm with you on that.
Like, listen, if we're going to cap what these teams can spend to develop their cars, then we need to ensure that the teams are spending every single penny that they're allotted, so that we know that this kind of shit doesn't happen. There's absolutely zero excuses for you not to have the parts you need to put both your cars on the grid during, you know, the start of quali, during the beginning of every race, whether you start from the garage or the grid itself. I just don't buy that. We're the pinnacle of motor racing. Drivers should be allowed to drive those cars to the absolute limits, knowing that if they mess something up, they've got the spare parts to fix it. Otherwise, what are we doing? This is literally just, you know, the rich man side of the sport versus the poor man side of the sport. And I thought the cap was intended to address that. It hasn't done that. So yeah, what are we doing? We're wasting our time here. And this is a perfect example of that.
So I saw a comment from Will Buxton about how, you know, he kind of said, oh, well, this has happened before. Mm. This is not new.
Yeah.
And then he decided to use examples from the 50s, which I thought that's kind of weird, to use it. So I put a comment kind of on there, like, this is the pinnacle of motorsport in 2024. How are we saying that this is okay or something like that? And, you know, of course there were some people that were like, oh, you know, you're an idiot talking about me. And I made it clear, like, hey, like, I like Will. I have zero issues with Will, but I do. And listen, we've done it too even on this show where we've compared things that, hey, this has always been the case, you know, and we do tend to say things like, oh, well, you know, there's always been dominance in the sport. There has been. It doesn't mean that it's like what people necessarily want to see, but also at the same time, there was another comment that said it used to be the pinnacle of motorsport. It's now the pinnacle of efficiency,
yeah,
which I thought was really interesting because, you know, are we just getting to the point where it's like, well, who's the most efficient? Who can be most efficient? Well, that only serves the teams at the top.
Yeah.
That,
well, the comparison, you know,
maybe have the talent, right? That can, like, or talent or money to be under that cap. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it's almost like if you have enough money, you can support being under that cap. If you don't, it's like, well, we can't even spend anywhere near it, which we know, like, Haas had that problem, right? They had to bring on those sponsors that were like, oh, we're now going to be able to get somewhere near the cap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the example that Will gave was, Collins giving his Ferrari to Fangio in Monza. And then Brooks gave his car to Moss to share the 57 British Grand Prix win. I mean, I get that, but those are top teams. They're racing for actual podiums. Williams is not racing for a podium.
I'm with you on that.
We're not. Very, very, I mean, I get the juxtaposition there, but very, very different scenarios completely. We're talking about a driver that is doing everything he can, whether he has a seat in Formula One next year or not. He probably won't, but Logan Sargeant is trying to do everything he can to make sure that his driving opportunities are going to be lined up after Formula One. And what happened today just basically says to him that Williams doesn't give a shit about where I end up after this contract. And that has to suck. That can't feel good. I don't care if people don't think he's a good driver or not. That can't feel good knowing that,
yeah,
you're just kind of being treated like a spare. So I don't care how cool these F1 fans think they are. You're not cool enough to think that is acceptable behavior, because it's just not. So I don't know. I feel badly for the guy. I think he deserves more respect than that. And, you know, they say respect is earned. It's not given. But Logan Sargeant hasn't done anything to make people lose respect for him. You know, he is just a guy out there trying to do the job. He's a charismatic guy. He doesn't say bad things. He's an unproblematic person. And you can't say bad things about him just because you don't think he deserves a seat in Formula One. I mean, right. he's just a regular guy. And I think we lose the humanity of the sport all the time because everybody has opinions. And, you know, I know that people, we see it all the time from the Max versus Lewis crowd where they're going at each other, shanking each other all day long on social media. And it's like, at the end of the day, they respect each other. They're both very passionate drivers, but they get along and everything's fine. It's not that serious. And yet,
but that's not the narrative, yeah. right? That's not, yeah, the narrative, that's not the narrative for the people on Twitter,
yeah,
or the
exactly.
keyboard warriors,
exactly.
like that doesn't fit. Yeah. Oh no, they can't be like, yeah. oh no, they can't be friends. What do you mean they're friends? No, they can't like each yeah. other. Why would Lewis want to shake his hand? Like, what are you talking
According
about?
To
These
them,
guys
they're
are
mortal enemies. When the reality is, they sit back just like regular dudes and like get off.
I don't
with
think
it.
They give a crap about each other just as much. Like, I don't think Lewis thinks about Max
yeah.
more than he has to, and likewise. And I don't think I bet you that. Not that I bet you that's. The case with any of these guys on the grid, like unless they're friends and they're hanging out, like, mm-hmm. I highly doubt they're thinking about one another. Like, oh, you know, I'm sure Charles is not sitting there like wondering about Max or caring about any of these, or like, unless I have, you know, if I'm racing him, it's one thing. If I'm home and hanging with my whatever, my boys, my girlfriend, whatever I'm doing, I don't give a crap about Max Verstappen. Like,
yeah.
I don't care about Lewis Hamilton. I don't care about
Charles. Because they know how to separate it. And I think, again, they respect each other because they know what each other does. They know what they're putting their bodies through. They know what they're putting their families through. They get it on a level that you and I, no fan could ever imagine.
We'll never understand. No.
And I think that's where that respect level comes from. Even the drivers, they respect Logan Sargeant because they respect what he's doing. They respect what he's putting his body through. They respect what he's putting his family through to watch him try and pursue that. And it's a different level. And I think, again, fans remove the humanity from it because they like the drama. Well, again, remember that there's a person under there, and remember there's 20 people on the grid every other Sunday that is doing this exact same thing, and they get it at a level we never will. So, and likewise with the camera operators and the personnel who are there, who, you know, if anything happens, you know, you could see any one of them get seriously injured. So, mm-hmm. I mean, these people are literally risking everything they've got to put on this entertaining show. And I think that's what kind of makes, we talk about the drama and all that, it puts a stain on the sport that we all love. And I think that's kind of the overall thing we can kind of take from this whole conversation, is that if we're not focusing on the racing, then what are we focusing on? We're focusing on the drama. We're focusing on the shit that makes the sport sell, I guess. And that shouldn't be the case. And look, I get it. If the racing is what it is, you get the regulations right or you get them wrong, and then you spend the next couple of years trying to play catch up, and that's on you. And that does make the sport suck sometimes. So I understand the need for sort of manufactured drama, but I think it's taking on a whole different persona right now that is so unnecessary. And frankly, I think it's going to be turning off a lot of people to the sport. I mean, the sport is what it is. You know, Alpine is a disaster despite having celebrity infusions. You know that McLaren, I mean, we haven't really talked about this, but they just got sold. Who did they get sold to?
The Bahrain investment fund.
Yeah.
So basically the government, yeah. the country of
yeah.
Bahrain,
so,
took over McLaren
yeah.
just before you, I just yeah. don't want anyone to get confused. McLaren Group.
Yeah.
Like the company that makes the car, the road cars, mm-hmm. Which also owns, I believe it's a majority stake in the McLaren F1
yeah.
team. So yes, in theory, they did also kind of buy the F1 team, but it was an investment, a direct investment or buyout of the McLaren Group.
Yeah. But there's so many more, there's so much more news to the sport, greater news than us having this continued, like, you know, litigation of the drama. And I think I just wish the sport would kind of move on from this stuff. And I guess we're guilty of it because we talk about it too. But I think for us, it's more unpacking that, why this isn't as serious as people think it is, you know, and more so, I think, reinforcing the fact that these are also people. I don't think enough
yeah.
sport, enough shows really do that without like kind of talking their own drama. I don't know.
Yeah, no, and we've talked about this before. I'll mention it. I'll keep mentioning this because I think it's very important. But the biggest mistake, I'm not going to say it's a mistake, because in the moment, you don't really realize it. And I'm seeing it now, like even with NASCAR, right? NASCAR's got they've got their Netflix. They have their Drive to Survive moment happening.
Yeah.
And Netflix already has really big numbers, has had big numbers in the US, but they have, I think they've run four races this year. Each race has increased in TV viewership. And of course, I don't want to take away from what they've done. NASCAR's done a great job with marketing themselves, but there's probably a little bit of a bump. There's people talking about NASCAR and people that are watching the show. I mean, I've read quite a few anecdotal things on Twitter of people that were like, oh, my girlfriend, you know, knew nothing about NASCAR, watched it, and now we went to our first race and we've got another one planned, right? And again, that's what if people were doing that with F1, with any races where it's like Drive to Survive got you to get up and go to a race, that's awesome. Because you can get a way different perspective.
Oh, it's so different.
What you're watching.
Yeah.
It's very the expectation on television is very different, especially in the Americas, where we are used to, you know, basketball or football, you know, or NFL football. You know, you're used to those types of sports and the experience you get while watching. You know, many times, and here's the other thing, many times people will say, oh, it's way better to watch NFL at home.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people. I love going to a game, love going to a stadium. I love rooting for my Steelers and waving the towels. Aside from a big game where you got that like crazy atmosphere, it's better on my couch.
Yeah.
Motorsport is not that.
No.
To me, motorsport is just not that. Yes, you have the TVs and the timings and the angles. The soul is sucked out on the television. And that's to nobody's fault. It just is what it is. The soul of motorsport is when you're there and you're in front of the cars and you're hearing it and you're feeling it in your chest. And like, you know, it's, oh my God. That is motorsports.
Let's put it this
and
way.
Go on. I was just going to say, what is missing from the Drive to Survive narrative, generation Drive to Survive, whatever you want to call it, is the lack of education on motorsport.
Yeah.
Because most of them were not motorsport fans. You're a fan of NFL football or you're a fan of basketball or whatever, that now moving into this new sport, not just the series, just motorsports in general.
Yeah.
A lot of, I mean, like, people, you have to be a car person, right? To like enjoy cars.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I would say the majority of people out there are just like, yeah, my car gets me from point A to point B, right? Like,
yeah.
They're not telling, they don't care. It is what it is. So if you're not a car person, you're not a motorsport person, and then suddenly you're watching this series that because you saw it on Netflix, that's really challenging to get into.
Yeah.
If you don't understand what you're about to embark on, like, yeah, there's going to be someone who might lead the race by large amounts of seconds. There might be a team that has figured out, this is a conversation I've had week in and week out with my brother, you know, who never watched. He's not a motorsport guy at all. He's not a car person. Like, he's just not him. He's just not interested in any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll ask me every week, why is this Max guy so good? Why is this, like, is he really that good? Is Red Bull just that good? And it's like, well, yeah, for these regulations. Well, what does that mean? Well, the regulations, you know, specify certain, you know, the ways to, you have to build the car. How do they build a car that much better than Ferrari? You know, because you hear Ferrari or Mercedes and you're like, oh, those are car brands. Like, those are, Ferrari's a fast car. How do they not figure it out? And it's like, well, because, and so you're sitting there trying to explain all this stuff to someone who's like, number one, they don't get it. Number two, they kind of lose you. So they're like, yeah, I just don't. Now I don't care. Now
yeah.
I'm lost even more.
100%.
And they lose interest, right?
Yeah.
They're not waking. I'm like, my brother's not going to wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning or midnight to, you know, tomorrow to watch this race. Like, he doesn't care. And I think it's that lack of education.
Yeah.
It really is. So like, if I would say something to NASCAR, it's like, make sure you keep educating people. Make sure it's more than just like the drama. And I don't know if you got a chance to watch the NASCAR one on Netflix, but I thought it was, they did it really well. And it was about the, you know, the playoffs, and they kind of followed some of the guys that were in the playoff race, which was really cool. But it didn't feel like where Drive to Survive went with things. Yeah. And maybe they learned something and they kind of switched up.
It was very different.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say about that. Yeah.
Very different. But then again, I feel like the drivers in Formula One are also younger, and I think their lives out in Monaco, they're just so much flashier. So maybe that's where they're kind of angling.
It's aspirational. Yeah, it's aspirational.
Definitely, for sure. Especially for young people. But I was going to say about the experience of Formula One. For example, when I was at the Las Vegas Grand Prix, we were sitting up in the box. And even when there wasn't a single car on track, they had a ton of TVs up there, and you could watch what was happening from the TV angles. And they were angled everywhere, all over the track, all over the garages, on the different networks when they were in between any type of session or whatever it was. And nobody was watching that. No one was watching that. Everybody was looking at the actual track. Again, not a single car on track. They were watching the sphere in the background and the different images changing. And that's where people, where their gaze was. And I thought that was so interesting because, again, you have an opportunity to watch the interviews that are going on in the paddock on the TVs, and they had the sound on, you could hear them. But nobody was doing that. Everybody was just watching, looking at the track. And I thought it was so fascinating because, again, when you're there and you're actually listening to those cars, and a lot of people who watch Formula One have never actually heard a Formula One car before. They have no idea what they sound like. You can hear the rumble before it happens. And then when it happens,
I wouldn't call it a rumble right now.
It's
nowadays,
not a rumble,
right?
But I don't know
if you remember the V10s and the V8s,
but
like those were,
I will say for Las Vegas, just hearing the acoustics of it on the Vegas Strip, that was a different level. And I imagine what it would sound like with the V8 or V10. And oh my God, like, that's why I'm saying if we have alternative fuels now, then give us those engines back, because I will take those any day. But I'm saying a lot of Formula One fans have never actually heard a Formula One car in person before. And so they have absolutely no idea what they're missing in person. But Formula One also hasn't done the best job in making these races attainable. And I tweeted that today, that the price of the ticket for the US Grand Prix has gone down a little bit. So that's good. But I think that so much more needs to be done to get people to actually be able to go to their first races. Because I think that's where the fan retention is really going to start to happen. Because I think eventually people are going to get tired of the drama. People are eventually going to say, what am I watching this sport for? I know who's going to win. The predictability of the sport is way too much for anyone to really take it seriously anymore. So they're going to have to incentivize it somehow, especially in the United States, especially if you're not going to have an American driver on the grid, if you're going to keep denying an Andretti entry on the grid. So you're going to continue denying a serious American team from entering, then, and you still want to expand F1 in the US. You've got to figure out ways to get American fans in those seats. And I'm not sure which direction they take that, but I think that what they did with Logan Sargeant's not going to play well to the American fan base.
If people care right now.
Exactly.
If people even care at
this
point. If
people care.
That's the other challenge.
But I think
people
care more right now because the season just started. So I think people care less as the season progresses because the predictability of the rankings kind of starts to become more apparent. Maybe I'm wrong with that, but at least for me.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know the numbers are down.
Yeah.
TV numbers are down, not just in the United States. The TV numbers are down from what I've heard globally.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to blame F1 on this one right now. There's a few different, you know, challenges there. You had two races on Saturdays, which are normal times.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've had, Australia race, which is just at a weird time, right? Just for most, or
I
for
like
many.
It.
I don't want to say for most. I like it because to me, this is like, oh, this is a real Formula One, either staying up late or waking up early to watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, to me, that's what I remember Formula One, right?
It's giving Vegas, and I'm for it.
It's literally no different than Vegas, right? It's just all very challenging right now, and there's a lot to think about. And it'll, once we get back to the European race, or like once we get back to, I say normal, but like, you know, the European races and whatnot, then it'll be, I think it'll be interesting. And that'll be very telling when the numbers come out for those races, because the numbers, I was looking at some of like the Italian numbers, and they're down pretty massive over the first two races. So I would definitely be curious to see what it looks like for this race. I think it's going to be more of the same, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
But I also think that, I also think that once we get back to Europe, that's going to be the one to tell us like whether or not there's a problem, like an issue, a challenge. And if there is, then like,
how do we
address and who knows if, you know, if the championship is out of hand at that point too, which
there might be,
I don't know. It could be.
I always joke and say that the championship will be decided by Monaco. Maybe it will.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm at the same time, you know, there's always a glimmer of hope when you see Charles Leclerc just flying out there, or you know, him and Sainz are doing well, and
I am,
the hopium kills you.
I am about Carlos Sainz this year. I hope he smashes it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
We have.
I'm watching. I got practice on right now, and Charles and Carlos are flying out there right now.
Love that for them. We've got one fan question.
Yeah, let's go.
Gavin Whitaker said, is there any
Gavin. What's up, Gavin?
Is there any mechanism to remove the current FIA president? Is this even something that is hoped for by F1 and the teams? From the people that I have spoken to in various places, they would like to see him gone. But they're a very, 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 very powerful organization. And that's unlikely to happen.
Yeah. From what I understand, I believe they can remove him if they wanted, like if they chose to. But that would be a really, it's kind of like politics, yeah, right? Like
it is. It is exactly like politics.
It's kind of like, you know, just like regular, like American politics or any type of, you know, government politics. That's what I'm trying to say. You risk your political capital.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, to start those types of things. And I'm not going to suggest I know exactly how it works. So I don't want to imply that. I know very little of how that works, the FIA, but from what I understand, like they have an ethics committee, they have all that kind of stuff, just like you would hear in the Senate or the House of Republicans or the House of Representatives, or just like you would hear in
Parliament
government.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, who wants to be the person to make that move with a sitting president, right? If you lose trust, if, you know, next person comes in and you are like, you're the one that tried to vote a guy out or tried to start issues with a former president, you know, a former president, you be kind of get blacklisted, right? Or you just get, what is it? The scarlet letter or whatever, like it, persona non grata. So I don't see that happening because I just can't see anyone wanting to be, or any group of people wanting to be like, yeah, we're the ones that booted them. And here's the other thing too, right? Like all of these allegations, they keep clearing him. So it's like, that would be the and this is the same thing with a president or with, you know, in government. The time to take somebody out would be in a situation like this. So if they really wanted to make something happen, this would have been a perfect opportunity.
Yeah.
With this investigation. Like, and again, people are saying, well, you know, if he did nothing wrong, he should be cleared. Yeah. But if people really wanted to get him out and they wanted to go down that path, you make things happen, right? Or you have an investigation and you find something else, right? That's not happening, which means signals to me that nobody really wants to go down that road.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how you feel on that, but like that's what it tells me, that nobody's trying to really go through that.
Yeah, same. And again, from what I've heard from the people I know in various spots, nobody wants to nobody wants to get involved in that. I think that he would have to do something that is just absolutely unthinkable for them to pursue that. But again, we talk about what happened with Susie Wolf. We talk about what the allegations of race fixing. We talk about so many things that happened, and he's fine. So, you know, just one little thing that I saw from Lewis Hamilton, he was asked, where is it? He was asked if he had, if Lewis Hamilton still had a President Sulaim support, and he said he never has. So, yep. I mean, I think that's, and Lewis isn't the only one, I think, to think that. I think a lot of people have, but obviously it's still very fresh in Lewis's mind what happened a couple of years ago. So we won't go into that, but I don't think that Formula One, most people within Formula One actually trust the governing body to begin with. So that's like, I think, put this into perspective. If you're a citizen, do you necessarily trust your government? No, you don't. If you're in Formula One, you're a driver, you're a team personnel, whatever it is, do you necessarily trust the governing body that is supposed to be presiding over you to make sure that everything is absolutely going to code? No, you don't trust that. So, and we understand why that is. It's the politics that are involved in the politics. We get that. So I just, you know, and again, I don't think they know this and they don't care. So I don't think we're going to see any movement happening there anytime soon, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, no, well, I mean, just, you're right. It's the reality of it.
It's the reality of it. And it's also, it's actually really funny. And then I'll stop after this comment, but it's the same thing when you see all these issues come out and a lot of people are like, why aren't more of these journalists coming out and speaking against it? And why aren't more of them? Why aren't they calling out the FIA? Because everybody's concerned about their position. To get an FIA card to attend races as a journalist or whatever, they have the power. Mm-hmm. You speak out against them and they decide. Now, I'm not suggesting that anyone, that this has happened, right? Like, I don't know. But do you want to be the one that called out the FIA or whatever as a card-holding journalist that goes to all the races, and then suddenly you get your pass revoked and now you don't have that access? That's your livelihood. What? You know, so I'm not suggesting that people shouldn't call out wrongdoing, but you pick your battles, right? If it, like you said, it just, how egregious is it? Is it mortifying? Okay, fine, then you know what, I'm gonna speak against it. Is it like, not really sure if it happened, maybe it happened, can't really prove it, I'm probably not gonna tie all my, you know, my eggs in that basket.
Yeah.
And that's what you're seeing, right? So it's all kind of tied in there. And you know, people will call it the mafia. They kind of joke and they're like, oh, the FIA, the mafia. You know, it kind of ends up being like that. And any organization is kind of like that. You know, the company you work for might feel like that, because it's like, how small of a situation do I want to raise and cause attention to for whatever reason? It's like, I almost want to wait and use my clout or put my eggs in something where I know it's going to stick and it's going to hit and it's going to do something, rather than, oh, let me just cry wolf. It's like the boy who cried wolf. And I don't know if what other fables work in other countries, but in the United States, the boy who cried wolf, you know, like, how many times do you want to do that before it's like, okay, no one's gonna even believe you anymore?
Yeah. Another day, another drama.
Practice 3 is happening at the moment. We are coming to an end of the show. My final word is go New Haven. Yale beat Auburn in the first round of the NCAA tournament. They were a massive underdog, and being from New Haven, just proud of my Yale Bulldogs.
You're trying to upset me right now.
I mean, listen, I know that you're over in the Cambridge camp, but
God,
go Bulldogs. Go Bulldogs.
Audacity.
They took down Auburn, and you know what? Ruined my bracket, but I don't even care, because Yale, they won. They did it. So that's my last parting thought. If you're watching the NCAA men's basketball tournament, I suggest you root for Yale, the underdog.
I will never root for Yale, not even once.
That's not my problem. Not my problem. You picked the wrong school to go to.
You're on a roll tonight. I like it. I respect it. It's spicy. I like it. All right. Well,
on that note,
I really hope Max Verstappen is forced to start from the back of the grid tomorrow. Won't happen, but, you know,
he'll still win.
All right, guys. We will talk to you later.
Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.